Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 208. My name's Turner Sparks.
And I am Michael Kaplan.
You can find me at turnersparks.com. You can find Kaplan at Cap in America on Instagram. I'm also on Instagram, at Turner Sparks on Instagram. This show, lostinamericapod.com. Cap. Yes. Let's talk. Well, on the show today, we have William Childress. He's a guy I started comedy with years ago. And he lived after he left China, where we started out. He went to Myanmar and he founded the comedy community, the comedy scene.
He's a king of Myanmar comedy.
He's the king of comedy in Myanmar. Yes.
King of comedy. That's what it is.
He's the Robert De Niro of Myanmar comedy scene. Before we get to, so we're going to talk to him about Aung San Suu Kyi, about the leader of Myanmar, about everything that's going on. They just had an election. She just got reelected. But before we get to him, Kaplan, yes, Let's talk about us. Of course,
let's,
us.
Let's always lead with us. Don't lead with the guests. Lead with us.
If you guys like this show, if you want to support this show, and if you want to get more of me and Kaplan doing on this show, we always say, Lost in America, we learn about the world, right? On our other show, Live from the Bunker, the world learns about us. Me, Sir Michael Ira Kaplan, in quarantine, in our bunkers, in New York City, our daily lives. This is a full throttle comedy podcast, 30-minute show, three times a week, just you, just me. Every once in a while, we have a guest. Every once in a while, we might do a bonus one of these Lost in Americas like we did this past week, right? We had Peja Bajovic, our good friend from Serbia, talk to us about how all the priests in Serbia are getting COVID because they won't stop kissing each other at funerals.
Dead people. Exactly.
But most of the time, it's me and you doing comedy. The way you can get that show and support us, be the engine that drives this show, is go to patreon.com/lostinamerica. There is a link to that in the description of this show. And for $5 a month, you can get Kaplan and I doing that show three days a week. So this show for free once a week, plus three more times another show. For $10 a month, Kaplan, what can they get?
$10 a month, we will send you a t-shirt, a number one in Armenia commemorative t-shirts commemorating our rise to the top of the very exclusive podcast charts in the great country of Armenia. We were number one there. We've since gone to number one in Peru, and ding, 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 we went to number one in Chile last week. We should thank our fans for that. But we the number one in Armenia, you always remember your first. So we have a t-shirt for that. We will send it to you for $10 a month. It's a great deal because you could also buy that shirt for $25. But for $10 a month, you get it for free. So
exactly. It's 25 bucks if you just want to buy it on our site, or for $10. And you could do what other people do. They put 10 bucks a month. They do that 1 month. And then the minute we give them the shirt, they bail and go back down to $5.
A bunch of scammers in our audience. We know who you are.
We know who you are. We will not name names.
You should join. Exactly. And join the Patreon immediately, because this week's going to be hot. We're going to have to recap all of our Thanksgivings, and I'm going to take a victory lap about the New York City school system coming back in business. So it's going to be a good week of shows.
Mr. Bill de Blasio finally came down on your side, Kaplan.
Yes, exactly.
Congratulations. Let's get to the show. Oh, also, last thing we should say. We said thank you to all of our listeners last month. Last month, October 2020, was our biggest month in terms of downloads in our podcast 4-year history. Guess what? This month, November 2020, beat last month.
Records are made to be broken, they say, and we are growing. We're like a tech company that's on the rise. We're IPO'd and we're booming, baby.
We're like the early days of MySpace.
You're Tom.
I'm Tom. So thank you, everybody. Yeah. Thank you for enjoying this podcast. Thank you for telling your friends. Please continue to do that. Continue to rate and review us on iTunes and all that stuff. And just tell your friends, because the more people we get in, the more we keep these cool guests coming back, and we keep the shows going. So Kaplan, should we move on to today's show?
We should move on to our guest from Myanmar.
Kaplan, before we get to him, what do you know about Myanmar? And then you tell him what you know. I'll tell him what I know. He can tell us what we got wrong and what we got right.
You're Mr. Asia on this podcast. I know a lot about a lot of places in the world, but Asia, I'm not so good. You know, I know that Burma was a place, right?
Let me start. You don't seem to know anything. I'm gonna take over here. Yes, Burma and Myanmar are the same place. If that's all you know, I got trouble for you. You're gonna have to keep up with this episode. So here's what we know is that in the 1980s, they had a military junta, I'm not sure what the term is. The military ran the country for many, many years. In 1988, Aung San Suu Kyi, who was the daughter of a former leader of the country, but she moved to Britain to go to college and all that stuff. In 1988, she came back to visit her mother. She led a couple protests. Bang, she got arrested, okay? Because they thought the junta thought she might be a competitor to take over the country.
Right, because her dad was very popular at one point. So
exactly. So she gets put in prison. It might be house arrest. William can clear that up for us in a second. But anyway, she gets put in prison in 88. She then spends the next, until 2010, in and out of prison. They let her out for a couple years. She starts a couple more protests. They go, "We thought you would learn your lesson. Looks like you didn't." Back into prison. Okay. So she's in and out. But during this time she's in prison, she becomes in Burma, her whole family is still in England. They're still in the United Kingdom. She now becomes a hero of the world. She wins a Nobel Peace Prize in 1991.
She's like a Nelson Mandela of sorts, a female.
Exactly. She becomes a Nelson Mandela type. Her husband dies in 1999 in England. She doesn't even leave to go see him. She says, "I love my country more than I love you," or something like that.
Problems in that marriage, I think. But yeah, go on.
Yeah, that struck me as a little bit odd. But moving on. 2010, she finally gets let out of prison. For some reason, they decide to have an election. So a couple years later, she wins the election. She becomes now the leader of the country. And then what happens right after? Everyone's so excited. It's like when Nelson Mandela becomes president, the same thing. And then her very first move is to commit genocide.
Yeah, she turned heel. I love it.
Some minority group. And she turned heel, classic heel turn. I don't know why. That's where we're left with today. William's going to answer our questions. William, how'd we do so far? And welcome
to
the show.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. Hey, Turner.
I should give you a proper introduction. William Michael? Childress, yes. Not only, as I said, not only we started together at Kung Fu Comedy in Shanghai, he went on create the comedy scene in Burma. He went to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in Scotland, did an entire show about his life in Burma, which is very popular.
Called The Funniest Man in Burma.
The Funniest Man in Burma, you're listening to, ladies and gentlemen. And then he's now in Atlanta, where he does stand-up comedy when he's allowed to do stand-up comedy all the time.
Well, we're doing
the show,
it,
William. It's great to have you back.
Thanks. It's great to be back. It's great to be with you guys again. This is the second or third time. Third time. Yeah, that's right. Because it was the studio once, and then it was about when Georgia started, opening up for COVID, and now I'm here to be an expert on all things Myanmar.
Are well, you the only person in the world who's an expert on Myanmar and Georgia
and a comedian?
No, I live like two blocks from the Carter Center, and they do all the they check on the transparency of elections and things like that in other countries and now here. But no, I mean, there's probably somebody like two blocks away from me that knows a lot more.
Well, do they do comedy?
And also,
you're funnier.
But also, I gotta give a plug to New American Pathways. You know, Clarkston, Georgia, right outside of Atlanta, has the highest per capita number of refugees in the country. And many of those are resettled from Myanmar along the borderlands where civil war still rages, even though one of Aung San Suu Kyi's promises was to end that civil war. So there's actually way more Burmese than you would think in the Atlanta area.
Well, let's get into it. So as you just touched on, she was going to end the Civil War. The Civil War, some people, it's a civil war, but also in 2017, there's a lot of reports that genocide may have happened.
Well, so let's start with the fact that for years, the Rohingya people who live in Rakhine State, which is, it's a state along the, I guess, Bay of Bengal, on the western coast of Myanmar, those people who are Muslim have been kind of disenfranchised for years, even before the current genocide. They were kind of denied a lot of rights. They were often harassed by the military. There was a tremendous amount of disinformation put out about them on Facebook that was very, very fascinating to look at now in light of the disinformation campaigns that run rampant on Facebook currently. I think that Zuckerberg should be put in the Hague or sent to the Hague. I guess they have a prison there too.
Do they have a prison?
They have a hole at the Hague. Put them in the hole at the Hague.
It's got to be pretty cushy though. I mean, there's got to be some heavy hitters there.
But, put them in the hole at the Hague.
Yeah, but the Burmese military kind of ramped up everything with the Rohingya, and it's really, I feel like that meets all the qualifications, which there are some, of a genocide in terms of they're being made to be stateless. See, the thing is, Burmese people always said, well, they're not Burmese, they're from Bangladesh, they're Bengali, they would call them. And then Bangladesh would say, well, no, like they haven't lived here for, you know, centuries or whatever, they're Burmese. And so neither one to claim them. It's just another, most of the civil wars on the borders and the issue with the Rohingya, like a lot of that has to do with, you know, like colonialism, like the colonization of India and Burma. And the fact that like some arbitrary borderlines were drawn and things like that. And the Burmese never considered themselves one cohesive people to begin with.
And just to clear it up, the Rohingyas live near Bangladesh.
Yeah. So they get shuffled back and forth. There've been multiple times where they'll get sent to the border and then the Burmese military will, you know, attack them as they're fleeing the border. When they try to come back over the border, once Bangladesh kicks them out, you know, they'll do the same thing. They'll attack them.
Meanwhile, so, killing hundreds, thousands of them. Right.
Yeah. And many of them flee to these boats that take them out in the ocean. They say, we're going to take you to Malaysia, because Malaysia and Indonesia, predominantly Muslim countries, take in a lot of these Rohingya people. And they actually have programs to kind of settle some of them as refugees. But a lot of the boats would basically turn them into slave labor. And they would say, well, you can't swim, can you? Guess what? You're a fisherman now. Or they would sometimes like take them out, ransom them, you know, or just throw them over the boat, you know, just kill them. So one of the things that Aung San Suu Kyi, there's a number of things she promised. Some of the main things, just to keep it kind of simple, some of the main things were to end civil wars going on in the country, because there's a number of armed ethnic groups, almost all at the borderlands of the country. So there's fighting that goes on, especially around the Thai border, Golden Triangle area. But then really a lot of the border areas, she was going to end that, okay? And she was going to end the military's guaranteed seats in the Burmese parliament.
And they're guaranteed 25% of the parliament, right?
Right. Correct? They're guaranteed 25% of parliament, which is enough so that the specific number is enough that like whatever you're going to get through, you have to have some military support for.
Right. Because you need 3/4 of, I think, votes to get.
It's something like that. Like it's something like you need just over three, like one more than 3/4.
So you need one military person. Yeah.
Yeah. And guess who's going to vote in a solid block every single time.
So,
She was going to spread democracy and end military rule, end the civil war. She never said anything about ending the genocide, because that's not what she campaigned on. She avoided. She's for years has avoided even saying the word Rohingya, because that's like, that is like a flashpoint in the country, is what to call these people. You know, that's why they'll call them Bengalis and they won't call them Rohingya.
Ah, because they're trying to make the point that they're not even, they never were a part of our country. Okay, so did she, just to clear up here, she came into power, was it 2012 or 2015? I know she got let out of prison in 2010.
So she got let out of prison in 2010, like you said. It was not prison. She was under house arrest. She was never in prison.
Yeah.
She was always under house arrest in a house that's like 100 yards away from the American embassy. There on one of the large lakes that kind of center in Yangon.
Yeah.
It's been a while. I forget which one it is. But she's under house arrest. She got out. And she would give speeches from inside the house. Yeah, she would stand up over the gate and talk to some of her supporters when she was able to do that. A lot of this has been kind of partially fictionalized. There's a pretty good movie starring Michelle Yeoh called The Lady.
I've seen it. Yeah.
That's how I told my parents to watch that when I moved there, because they didn't know anything about it. And they were like, oh, it seems like you live in a really scary place. I was like, it's not that bad. Like, and my grandma knew less than Michael did about she was less educated than Kaplan about the country.
Who knows about this country? This is not, I know about Sharansky and those prisoners. I don't know about.
She was like, my grandson lives in a country that begins with an M and used to begin with a B. And it's in. That's literally all she knew about it.
So she gets out of prison she gets out of house arrest 2010. And why did the military even let an election happen? Because the military had been ruling the country for 30 years, right?
Well, I think that they did it to, and I there is probably like a real answer that I don't know for sure.
Yeah, sure.
I seem to remember it was kind of for appearances, and they're like, yeah, we can, you know, whatever, like, we're gonna rig this thing anyway.
Okay.
Or we're just going to let it happen. And I think part of it was, a lot of the shit they do is for aid money. It's like, okay, like if we hold elections, then some of these countries will stop boycotting our stuff. We'll stop, you know, freezing our accounts, all this kind of stuff. Like, look, we're transitioning to democracy. But as soon as she was elected in a landslide, they're like, oh yeah, no, that didn't count.
All of a sudden, she now has power. Is it 2012?
Those voting machines were made by Dominion, actually. I don't know if anybody
Oh, my God. Here we go.
We'll get to Georgia at the end of this episode. Let's look.
So, wait, was that 2000? That was like 2012 when she
was like 2010, 11.
They had an election right before that, right? They had one in 2010, and then they had another one in 2012.
I do remember when I was there, because I've done your show there a couple times. And I remember talking to somebody, I think it was a Burmese guy maybe, saying that he was like, well, when the military leaves power, all the same people were still in power. They just took off their military uniforms.
They took off their uniforms, yeah.
And they put on business suits.
Ah, yeah.
But ultimately, it's the same thing. So
they still had a gun in there.
So then is she, once she gets power, does she really have power, or is she a figurehead, but she's made some deal with the government, military? Let me be a president or whatever they call me, but you guys can still run the show.
Well, so after she got elected, they did not honor that. They made constitutional changes that one of the things barred someone from being president. If they're married to a foreigner, or if their children are partially foreign, something like that.
Then you can not be president.
She has a British husband who died of cancer while she was under house arrest, and she has, two British Burmese children, one of whom I think lives in Oregon. And so, like, they basically they might as well have just added the Constitution. Aung San Suu Kyi cannot be president.
Yes.
That's how petty and specific it was. So she appointed a minister to take that, essentially, once she was actually elected, 2015, she appointed a minister to kind of have a figurehead role. And then she ran everything, and everybody knew that. And that was like, there's nothing they could do about it, whatever. Like, the military kind of knew, yeah, whatever, that's the way it's going to be. But she's not, you know, president.
And she has some title, but it's like some random title, right?
It's like a state counselor or a minister or something.
Something like that. Okay.
Yeah, it is something like that, but she does call the shots.
Since 2015, basically.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So I've heard a couple people explain why, because the thing is, she's a Nobel Prize winner. She brought all this, you know, people were really hopeful for the future of the country. They really thought she could bring about change.
Like Mandela.
Not just because her father was the first leader of an independent Burma in 1948, before he was assassinated in the Secretariat building downtown. Aung San. And that just because of her unique story, her connection to the outside world and the people that loved her within the country, she was a person to bring them back to the world stage, to bring them out of, you know, this decades long military junta where they were basically like North Korea with palm trees kind of. And the problem with that, I feel like, is that I've seen it described that she was maybe never the person who was ever going to stand up for the Rohingya.
They projected, you think, what they wanted to believe? Because exactly. Was she ever asked exactly about right. How she felt about the Rohingya? And she just, or she...
You know what? She never gave a good answer about it, ever. Yeah. Like, the thing is, she's been a real coward about all of this and has always dodged it to the point where people really started to believe, like, well, how could she be like this? That's like, well, she never... She wanted free elections, right? She wanted the military to be gone, but she might have had her own idea about the ethnic, the racial order of the country.
She wasn't necessarily against ethnic cleansing.
Right.
Not necessarily.
It was pro-democracy, but also, you know.
No, because part of the reason, so Burmese, part of the country, the majority ethnic group in Myanmar are the Burmans, hence the name Burma. But there are, you know, dozens of other ethnic minorities, many of whom have their own armies, have their own kind of, essentially their own little territories, right?
Their own armies,
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's the Karen army, and there's the Wa state army, there's the Kachin army, and they're everywhere. And so they never consider themselves part of this big country called Burma. Because they're like, look, the British did that. We were just people in this part of the jungle.
Or
we had this connection. We never agreed to be in a country with these people. You know, we live in the same, you know, spit of land about the size of Texas or whatever, but we're not the same. And, you know, some of that, there were basically the recent elections where she was elected in a landslide. Many of the places where the ethnic minorities held sway were not even allowed to vote.
Well, that's what we wanted to get to. Yeah. So let's get there in a minute. I have more questions.
Right.
Here's something I didn't even know is I had thought that this ethnic cleansing of the Rohingya had only happened in 2017. I thought this was an isolated incident.
It's been going on for years.
I did not even know that.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that was going on while you were there visiting. That was,
you were supporting that, Trevor.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, Trevor, you could have stopped it.
I was in some way endorsing it by doing. It was like the people who would go to
not equal.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, yeah.
But Amnesty International, we should say, gave her like an award in 2009, and she won a Nobel Peace Prize. But nobody ever asked her this whole time, like, what you think of these people who are being genocided, or what you would do about it, or she just,
you know, I don't, I know that she had been asked that over time. I don't know when the earliest questions were, because you have to wonder, like, when were people really aware of this to ask her the question about it?
Yeah.
Right. But I do know that when she was in power, that she would not say Rohingya, that she would give pretty non-committal answers, you know, the question is, there's no good excuse for it, period. And it does need to be stressed that this is one of at least two genocides occurring in the world right now that nobody's really doing anything about, you know?
Yeah.
The others, the Uyghur people, obviously. So the Uyghurs and Rohingya.
I was going to say, which is the other one? Because we got to book a comedian for that one. And then I'm like, oh, wait, never mind.
Well, you know, turn to that big Xinjiang tour. But yeah, so
I didn't know.
But it's remains to be seen whether she genuinely doesn't care or might hold these same prejudices as a lot of the country does, or if the military still has way more power than even the 25% of the parliament would lead you to believe, and they still pull all the strings, and that they basically say to her, hey, look, you can deal with like policy stuff for the people and whatnot, but in terms of like what we consider security and our border security, et cetera, we're going to do that, and you're not going to do a damn thing about it. And so to save face, she just doesn't, she's not going to tell the people that she's against it.
So this could be a deal she made to get most of what she wanted done, or maybe possibly all of what she wanted done. Maybe she genuinely doesn't like them and doesn't care about them.
Nobody really knows.
We just assumed she would care about them because we assumed she was this one person that she never said she was. It's like Bob Dylan in the 60s.
She, in fairness to her, she didn't lead us on. She didn't false. Yeah. She kept her campaign promises. You know, she lowered taxes.
So what about this? Why is she not, if the world seems to agree that genocide has been committed while she was the leader of the country, why is she not being held up by an international tribunal of some sort?
She was called to The Hague, and she defended her country and her military to The Hague.
Wow.
She went. She actually went there?
A year or two ago.
They didn't throw her in the hole while she was there?
No. No, you know, I mean, you know how they are at The Hague. I mean, Bush is still free, right?
If I got called there, I don't think I would show up.
Well, she hired Rudy Giuliani as her lawyer. And she,
so she, that's she, interesting. So she did go there.
She went to The Hague. I'm pulling this up now. Yeah, she went to The Hague in December of last year, actually, and defended the genocide. She called allegations of genocide incomplete and misleading. But look, more than 700,000 were forced to flee the country. Nobody really knows exactly how many have been killed. They have razed entire villages, you know, and they denied it. But a number of organizations, maybe Bellingcat, which is great. I don't know if you know them. You should talk to, there's a guy you should talk to from there. They do open source investigations. So like what they did, Bellingcat, Bellingcat. They're the people that figured out that the Russians took out MH17, right? The Malaysian airline.
Oh, okay. Malaysian airline.
They even went on Twitter. They'll do things like they'll go on Twitter and they'll see people tweeting about, oh, hey, like a rocket launcher just drove down our village. And they'll timestamp that. And then they'll create a map of when the Russians were bringing in the rocket launcher into Ukraine. And that for the like backtracker from tweets and from leaked audio. And so things that any of us can find, they actually used satellite imagery and went and found all these Rohingya villages that had been burned to the ground and like even like covered up, even like the ashes covered up. So,
I mean, there's reports of mass graves.
Yeah. They've been found, and there were the two journalists, Jaw Soyu and God, I forget the other guy's name. But there are two Burmese journalists that uncovered and linked a mass burial site to the Burmese military. They created the link to prove it, and they were put in jail.
That gets me to my next question, which is not only so if we say that, well, she's doing everything good, it's just this one thing she had to make a concession to the military, it still doesn't bear out with the idea that she's, I guess, repressing. Like a lot of people there are saying now the press is less free than it was.
There's far more censorship than there ever. I mean, yeah. I mean,
they, under the dictatorship was, even?
Yes.
Wow.
Look, am I wrong there? What?
It's not as much as during the dictatorship, because during the dictatorship, you couldn't put out anything. And there was actually an organization called like the Board of Scrutiny and Censorship or something like that, where like, you know, that there was like people would write poetry and hide government criticism in the poetry, you know.
Yeah, because
like,
nobody reads poetry. That's smart.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. Nobody with like, you know, military uniforms. And poetry. But it's not as bad as that. But Wallone and Jaw Soyu were the two Reuters journalists, I believe Reuters, Yeah, Reuters, who were imprisoned for reporting on that, on the mass grave. And so, like that, nothing like, I mean, like that, nobody thought something like that would be happening under Aung San Suu Kyi.
Yes.
That two reporters who were doing amazing work, they were actually, I forgot what happened, but like the police basically like entrapped them. Like a guy said like, oh, I have like a cell phone or something you need to see, and like gave it to him or put it in their bag or something. And then the police were like, oh, look, you have, you know, stolen like secret information. So,
so what happened to her? Like, why did this?
There was clues, I guess. She turned heel. There must have been. No,
I don't know. Is the big question that everyone wants to know?
Yeah,
that's what everybody wants to know. But like, the fact is that Burmese people, obviously, they're not a monolith. I mean, for sure, ethnically, they're definitely not. But in terms of opinion, even of the majority Burman population, they love her. And you know, it's difficult to stress quite enough what a savior figure she was for years, and the fact that she was under house arrest, and that she persevered for so long as a symbol of democracy, and a symbol of as whatever people wanted to project onto her, like we said. It's really tough to break away from that, despite evidence to the contrary. And another thing that I always heard from people that much more knowledgeable about Myanmar than I was when I was living there is that you're not going to meet a much more patient people than the Burmese, partially because of the Buddhist thing, like the many life, like they're going to, there's another life after this, whatever. They're suffering under the military regime. The next life's going to be a little bit better. So the fact is she's had one term, and there's a lot of people that might be like, yeah, well, she hasn't, maybe she's even regressed. Maybe she hasn't done a single thing she promised except for, you know, more crayons in schools or some shit, but give her time. Like it'll, whatever, the arc of justice is whatever.
Well, and as you said, she won. So they had an election a few weeks ago, which is kind of why we did this. It's timely in the sense. And she won. On one hand, she won with like 80% of the vote. And opinion
she won 80%
polls,
of 75% of the seats.
Right? Okay. Right, so, right. And opinion polls leading up to it is that she's like 79% approval rating even before the election. So she won like 80% of these seats, as you're saying, or 75% of the seats that were available to win.
Right.
But on the other hand, like in the Rohingyas state, she didn't put out, they weren't allowed to vote, basically.
Right. Rakhine State, where they're at, is they were not allowed to vote. What they try to say was that in these parts of the country that were undergoing a lot of conflicts, it's not safe for us to have election people out there. It's not safe for us to have election monitors. They're going to be targets. You know, just all bullshit on the pretense of disenfranchising people from the vote who have a reason to not vote for her party, because her party is not the party of any ethnic minorities, really. Yes. There are several other small parties. There's the USDP, which is like the pro-military party. Basically, when the military transitioned to the guys in uniforms to the guys in suits.
Yes.
They were all USDP, I think. It's like Solidarity and something party.
So they have a party on top of the 25 seats they already are, 25% they're already guaranteed.
Yeah, they have a party that is also like loyal to the military, but it's not like straight up the Tamadol, which is the name of their military, is the Tamadol. And I think the parliament is called the Pitangsu Yekta, which I'm not 100% sure. That's also a street name in Yangon. But
we'll give it to you. I'll buy it. I believe it.
But they didn't want to put in mail-in voting. No, they couldn't want to. safety.
Yeah, mail.
Fraud, right?
Mail. I don't know how well mail really happens there. I mean, when I was there, they were still banking using ledgers, no computers.
Wow.
Oh, wow. And this was real. When were your years, by the way? When were you there from?
I was there 2013 to 2015. So I was Shanghai 2010 to 2013. Then Burma from 3 monsoon seasons. So I moved there in July and lived there until like the next 2 Augusts later or whatever.
And why doesn't the military now, just take over again?
I believe that – I really believe that it's because they make more money pretending to be open.
Mm. Yes.
That, because so I moved – when I moved there in 2013, that was when laws had just kind of changed within the country and certain blacklists and embargoes from Western countries on Myanmar were lifted. So, you know, in 2012, I could not have legally moved there and worked.
True.
Unless I was with like an NGO or an embassy. Because when I first moved there, there was nobody there who didn't work for either the UN or an embassy or an NGO. You know, occasional, there like nobody moves there to teach because it doesn't pay. You know what I mean? Whereas you meet a lot of expats that teach other places.
Yeah, there are a lot of later expats in Myanmar in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first moved there, I knew all of them. You know what I mean? Like it was, there were.
And you were in the capital city, the main city in the country.
It used to be the capital, and the government built a brand new capital in the middle of nowhere that an astrologer told them to put the capital, nice. That it would be very auspicious to put it there. And like nobody lives there. No foreigner. The only foreigners that live there work for the hotels, like the chefs or whatever, and they fucking hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nobody there at all. That's called Naypyidaw is the name of that town. But all the embassies and things like that are still in Yangon. Like nobody wants to live in Naypyidaw. Nobody lives there. It just doesn't happen.
Does the astrologer live there?
No, I'm sure they live in Yangon too. Live in a nice palace.
But they don't have, I mean, tourism in general though, if you have it, you can't have all these skirmishes on the borders and, you know.
Well, you can't go to the borders. You're not allowed. Like, I couldn't have just traveled anywhere in the country I wanted.
Yeah. Kaplan, I went there twice. I didn't even know these were going on.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. But
well,
they conceal it pretty well.
They conceal it. Well,
it doesn't affect the capital as much. I mean, when I first moved there, somebody put a grenade in the toilet at the Shangri-La Hotel.
Whoa.
And then there were a couple kids got killed when like an ethnic group put like IEDs underneath like trucks or something. So like the kid would go like, oh, there's something under the truck. I don't know what it is. Then boom, they get blown up in the middle of the street. You know, that was 2013. There were maybe like two, maybe three explosions, but that's when you're like, okay, there's some stuff going on they don't want us to know about.
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah.
So I mean, when, sorry, go ahead, William.
No, some of the stories from the borderlands are pretty fascinating. I mean, beyond just the Golden Triangle and everything that goes on there with, you know, opium and methamphetamine production and distribution throughout all of Asia and Australia and, you know, all that area. You know, there was a ethnic group that had child soldiers, the Two Brothers, H-T-O-O. There were two, it was like a 9-year-old and an 11-year-old that were walking around with AK-47s bigger than they were.
And they were the leaders of the military.
They were the leaders, right? Because the people believed they were impervious to bullets and could summon armies of ghosts.
I remember
they're short. It's harder to hit them, but yeah.
That's right. It's a small target.
I mean, my 8-year-old is really good at the Nerf gun game, so I can see that.
It's the same reason you go with, what's his face in GoldenEye.
Well, it's like in Little League, the coach
gets all the walks.
The coach just tells the shortest guy to crouch, and then no one can ever pitch in his strike zone.
Yeah, low man wins.
So, my kid's an underachiever.
How effective has she been otherwise? And just like her other policy,
The train's running on time. Is it
like because she came in with no military? I mean, no government experience, basically, right? She had been this hero figure. But practical
government experience, but she did a tremendous amount of work with the National League for Democracy before, like intermittently when she was in and out of house arrest, before she was under house arrest. She would tour the country trying to spread democracy with what was the opposition party at the time, the NLD.
She was in house arrest, she could tour, or when no, she kind like, of in and
she
out.
She wasn't under house arrest the entirety of that time. But you know, and the government even talked about like, well, she's out spreading democracy again. I think we should kill her. And then somebody was like, well, we can't. I mean, she actually almost got assassinated at least once.
I would imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's not a dilettante to politics for sure, but, okay. But I think her coalition building is what people kind of were hoping for from her, which, you know, it's happened insofar as building her own party, but not outreach to anybody who isn't, you know, the majority.
As you said, none of the minority groups, she hasn't really gone to bat for any of them.
No, they don't like them. They weren't allowed to vote. Some of them have their own parties, their own representatives. And then there were ethnic minority groups that did win some seats in the parliament too. So, I mean, there is some, you know,
but you mentioned it's Buddhist is the main majority of the country.
Buddhist is the majority of the country. A lot of the ethnic groups are like Baptist or Methodist.
Because
basically what happened is
they're being discriminated against her.
What had happened was the white people went in there and tried to convert everybody. And all the people in like the most of the Buddhists in like the main parts of the country where they had food and clothing were like, nah, we're good. We've been sticking with this for, you know, thousands of years. But like when they would go out into the middle of nowhere where people didn't have like shoes or electricity and they'd be like, hey, if you read this Bible, we'll feed you. They're like, yeah, sure.
That doesn't sound like us.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, so it's like the outskirts. It's like the real big hicks, the ones that are the most Christian.
The red states
like
of Well, I care. And what about the Buddhists? Because this has always fascinated me. Last time I was there, the Buddhists, I don't know if I took your question, Kaplan, but the Buddhists.
I think we're in the same place.
The Buddhists were having like, there was violent Buddhist monks going through Urathu. The streets, which I just never, that blows my mind as a concept. Like Richard Gere has taught us those people don't exist.
Right. Yeah, that's why I like this story.
Urathu. Is like a honorary form of like Mr. Like it's just the letter U. So you'll see somebody's name as U and then their name.
Okay.
That's just like a really good version of Mr. Whereas like Aung San Suu Kyi is Daw Aung San Suu Kyi, DAW. It's an honorific, you know.
Got it.
He's always described in papers as a firebrand, which is never a good thing.
What is he, Dolly Parton?
Well, that's a good thing. But he is a Buddhist monk, like you said, who leads a monastery outside of Mandalay and is available for interviews. He's very into PR. He likes to get out there. He was on the cover of either Time or Newsweek when I was there. It was called like the new face of Buddhist terror. He was regarded as like a Buddhist Hitler.
Is he the Buddhist Bin Laden?
That would be him too. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got everything.
Book him.
Yeah.
Book him.
But yeah, he's a real nasty guy. And he was leading a lot of the anti-Muslim stuff. And he was leading the violent charges against them. He was also leading general violence against non-Buddhists. Like when I was in Yangon, one of my friends had a bar advertised a drink night special with a picture of Buddha in headphones that he found online. And he was put in jail for about 2 years.
Is this 50th Street Bar?
Oh my God.
He used to run 50th Street. It's not
the
guy
you performed. Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's Phil Blackwood, great dude. Shout out to Phil. He used to run 50th Street, then went off on his own thing and was basically used as like an example. You know, he was like using it as an example. Like, here's this foreigner. Cops had to stop like a pack of monks from like dragging him out of the bar or his home or something. I forgot. But so what happened was, I don't know if you remember in like maybe 2012 or 13 when China and Japan had another little spot, like kind of, you know, tete-a-tete about what was it, the Diaoyu Islands?
About the islands between in the East China Sea between Japan and China. They both think
The Senkaku or Diaoyu Islands. So all like the sushi restaurants in Shanghai put up signs being like, hey, we're Chinese. Like, calm down. Leave us alone.
Oh, they all got firebombed. Or not firebombed. Yeah, exactly. They got rocks through their windows in Suzhou, the Japanese
kindergarten. Like a Japanese kindergarten got like rocks thrown at the kids in the playground.
Yeah.
The same thing happened when I was in Yangon, where all these bars would put up like the Buddhist flag in front of the bar. And be like, hey,
we're like,
please.
We're not that guy.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. We're not Phil. You know,
no laughing
alone.
Buddha here. No.
No.
So
by the way, the Buddhists have great PR, I gotta say, because like I feel like the image in America of Buddhism is just all peace. Like, you don't hear about these incidents. They fix them. There's like a fixer.
Oh,
something.
Yeah.
I've never heard any of these.
There isn't a religion that hasn't been used to whip up terror in some way or shape, you know?
Yeah.
I got a lesson learned.
Speaking of, why hasn't the world, anyone in the world stepped up for the Muslim, the Rohingyas? You know what I mean? Has there been
There's been a lot of good there's been a lot of good journalism about it. I mean, I forget the journalist's name, but she won, I want to say she won a Pulitzer for her reporting about the slave fishermen, like the Rohingya that get put on these boats, and how like a Thai general was involved in human trafficking, getting them to be, you know, slave labor for Thai fishing vessels that would pick them up in Burma. And how that's why I do not buy any seafood that is labeled Thailand at all, just because it very well could be, you know, slave labor.
Oh, wow.
I ate a lot of fish when I was in Thailand.
Look, Genoa tuna, if you see that in stores, don't buy that shit. That's Thailand.
Really? So,
what brand?
Oh, well, allegedly, whatever. Don't
sue. We're doxing tuna companies here. I like it.
There you go. Yeah. Take down tuna.
So do the people have any, is there any sort of territorial reasons for all this, like, that they're facing, all this discrimination, or just like they don't like them?
Look, if there is, I don't know, because there's nothing, there's not much there. I mean, there is a beautiful beach resort in Rakhine State, but that's been owned and run by, you know, the generals and their families and the Burmese ethnicity people for years. Because it used to, you could fly into Sitwe, which is the capital of Rakhine State, and they'd put you on a bus. And they'd put the curtains down on the bus so you don't see, like, the Rohingya and like in their refugee camps as you drive out to, like, you know, some $500 a night, you know, beach resort.
Brutal. Honeymooners, sir.
Brutal. What's her – on Aung San Suu Kyi, what's her plan? Deal? What's her plan going forward? It seems like she's not giving up power, right? She hasn't
– Oh.
There's no successor coming along.
I haven't heard anything about that. If there is, I mean, I think that I think that she outwardly facing is trying to say she wants to lessen the military's control over the government. But at the same time, you know, I worked there as an architect, and like half our clients were ex-military. You find out like almost any like business or hotel or something is some military crony or his family, or there's like five or six families that own half this, like the jade mines and the opium producing and the ruby mines. And like, it's, you know, who had the power to jack all that shit years ago and take it for themselves is the military people. So even if they're not still military, they're all still connected. And I think that she has to, at least the cynical part of me says all this is to make it appear like a real democracy to the people of the country and to foreign investors.
That's what it seems like.
Yeah, because that's more money into her and the government and the cronies' coffers, you know?
If she wanted, it almost seems like if she wanted real change, she would need like the EU behind her or some foreign military that could come in and almost like take over and put her in as like a.
Well, I mean, that's really unprecedented. The only, I mean, the look, Cambodia in the mid 90s, the UN actually had control of the country. And that was like a nightmare. Like there's so many stories about foreigners, like expats coming in there. And like, there's a book called Off the Rails in Phnom Penh, which is fascinating. It talks about those years that it was the most psycho foreigners you've ever seen just would move there. Cause they're like, oh, I can buy, you know, a child and heroin and gun and like, you know, and
combo meal.
By the way, those people are still there. I went to Cambodia.
You
get a free child with your heroin if you buy enough.
They're still there. The child thing is, I think, overblown. That's more. That's, you know, that's
it's the sketchiest foreigners. It's the sketchiest expats that I've met in Asia are all in Cambodia.
Well, they're
not all the ones I met, but the ones there.
No, because the people that live in Cambodia, either the people that live in Cambodia that are the sketchiest are not the people that move there because they enjoy Cambodia. It's the people that move there because they got kicked out of Thailand.
Exactly.
And that is like the for real. And but so I have to think that the idea of foreigners coming in and running the country, I mean, there's no country that's going to want that, especially a country as fiercely nationalist as the Buddhists have kind of whipped up the Burmese people to be.
Yeah.
Like, they're never going to accept foreigners. Like, they're accepting foreigners to come in and, you know, distribute money and visit and be a tourist and come in there and work. But like, they don't want them telling them what to do.
Sure. You know. Makes sense.
And you look at like the UN observer that was there, you know, she had death threats and like they said awful things about her, and almost everybody in Myanmar has at least one Facebook account. It's one of the highest percentages of engagement with a population that Facebook has. And especially for a country that for, you know, when I was there to get a SIM card was $1,500 when I first moved there.
Really?
By the time I left, you get one for free. So it's been a rapid shift into the internet. So people don't know necessarily how to pick bullshit from the real stuff. And, you know, neither do Americans that should know better. But the Facebook's role in this is significant. And that propagating lies and the official Burmese military page, like spreading disinformation about Rohingya and stuff like that. Like, it's just
okay. So people have like worked up this fervor to believe that Rohingya is somehow the source of all their problems. They're somehow the enemy. If we get rid of them, everything will be fine.
Yeah, and like they're terrorists and whatever. And like that Rohingya are like dirt poor people with almost no country that are struggling for their daily survival. They're trying to, I mean, like. I'm sure
there ever are terrorist attacks sometimes though, or
there is some activity of like terror cells, but like very minor, but it's, I think a lot of what happens is Rohingya that go to like Indonesia and Malaysia, where it's shown that there are, you know, radical clerics and people that kind of radicalize them and then maybe come back, or that, you know, spread that within the community. But like, that's on a percentage basis. I mean, it's probably no higher than the other religion that has their own violent fanatics.
Yeah,
but they don't leave. They go to other places. There's never been the Rohingya just saying, "I'm getting the hell out of this place." Like,
they can't. Like, they can't. They don't have like citizenship anywhere. They don't have papers They have like they have a different color like citizenship card than anybody else in Myanmar. And Bangladesh has taken them in and kicked them out, and taken them in and kicked them out. Like I said, Indonesia and Malaysia take a lot of men, have a lot of charity for them and do a lot of good things in terms of trying to take them in. But in general, like, they don't have really anywhere to go. I mean, they're stuck in a country that doesn't want them, with a border of another country that doesn't want them. And their only way out sometimes is the ocean. And that's,
they don't want them.
And the lady who won't help them just got reelected with 80% of the vote.
Yeah.
So it's not even like there's no tide turning towards.
It's not all rosy for her. I should mention, I mentioned earlier, she got an Amnesty International gave her an award. Well, they stripped that award from her recently, so she's no longer.
Guess what other award she's being stripped from? Got this T-shirt years ago, thinking that I was going to be the new.
Oh, goodness, look at this, folks. for the audio listeners, he's holding up a National League of Democracy shirt for democracy with a picture of her on it.
Yes, it's the only other just picture of someone's face on a T-shirt I have is Vlade Divac. That's how much I thought about her.
This is like the Che Guevara shirt for you are a college kid reading.
I thought I was woker than woke with my fake Che. I was like, they have Che Guevara. I'm one upping it and getting her shirt.
Yeah, it's more unique. It's like not everyone's gonna buy the Stan Smith sneakers. I'm gonna buy these other vintage sneakers.
But now I'm scared. If I wear this on the shirt, I'll get beat up by somebody.
Oh, no. I mean, there's
nobody knows.
Okay. Yeah, there's a couple Burmese joints around New York City. You can go wear that too and probably welcome them.
When did you get that shirt? Did you get that?
I don't think I got it when I went there with William. I think my brother, he definitely went to Burma. Mm. I want to say like 15 years ago, and he must have got it for me then.
State
he went
Department.
On a college trip, pre-State Department. So maybe 20 years ago on a college
trip. Yeah, you used to get like a 7-day meditation retreat visa.
Sounds like
Burma,
him.
And that was the only way you could get in the country as a foreigner for years.
So would you go? That's how Richard Gere would be there, and all the the Dalai Lama.
Oh, when I was there, Jay-Z and Beyonce flew in for like one day to go to uh, to go to Bagan, where all these ancient temples are.
I went to Bagan. It was beautiful.
I mean, it's tough to meditate when you hear people screaming in the background from being murdered, but yeah.
No, I saw Cardi B was there, not then, when I was there.
Bagan, when you see the temples in Bagan, that used to be, there used to be whole little villages all around the foot of those temples, and they cleared that shit out.
Oh, don't tell me that. Don't tell me that.
Everything you did.
Now I got to burn my pictures.
You got to burn those pictures. Burn that shirt right in the air. Light it up.
That's a good idea. This will be like when LeBron left the Cavs.
Yes.
You just tear it in half. A real Sinead O'Connor moment.
Burning this jersey. So would you imagine, William, this is my last question. If this podcast, say this podcast blew up and 10 million people listened to it and it was big in Burma.
Why not say it will blow up? Let's be honest.
Exactly. We're getting bigger and bigger.
We're in Armenia.
Would you, number one in Armenia.
We're not going to be number one in Burma.
Would you be, in all honesty, would then you be scared to go back to Burma because of the things you said on this podcast?
I would be scared to go back to Burma because a guy who tried to murder me still lives there. But
let's talk about that. How come it took us an hour to get to that story? What's that?
I was set up with an apartment by my company. It had like 4 bedrooms and was big, but like dusty, not great. So I was going to like, all right, I'll get a roommate or two and, you know, make some extra cash. There was an Italian dude named, I'm not going to say his name. It was an Italian guy I met at a bar a couple times. He was one of the regulars, nice guy. Enjoyed
this is not the guy I introduced you to, is it? The guy from Australia?
No. Oh, no, not at all.
Italian.
No. Oh, good. Well, Italian. This guy's Italian heritage, so I was a little.
Okay. Well, no, this guy was straight up Sicilian. He used to be in the Italian Navy and, like, had psycho eyes. but he moves in, and I remember when he came to visit to check out the apartment, my friend cut his leg really bad. Had cut his leg really bad, like on something on the street, and he immediately knew how to get blood out of clothes. Like
that's not good.
A Sicilian who knows how to get blood out of clothes.
Yeah, like I mean, he was just like, "Oh, take off your pants, give them to me, rub rock salt on it, put it in cold water, blood's gone."
Bam.
And that, well, that works, by the way.
By the way, that's very useful to me because I bleed all the time. So
yeah. But look, long story short, the guy was like an alcoholic and started using like methamphetamine. So like, well, at first he was a really good roommate, good cook, all that good stuff, like brought a TV and whatever. Slowly he started like never sleeping, drinking like 50 cans of beer in like a weekend without sleeping, and I never saw any meth or pills, but there's no way he wasn't on something, and started to like get increasingly like delusional, thought I owed him money. And then took a big like fishing knife. He was like a fisherman too, like a serrated fishing knife, and started trying to stab me with it, broke off a chair and tried to stab me. He stabbed the fishing knife into the wall beside me. Whoa. And like his hand slid down it. He cut the tip of his pinky off, and blood was going everywhere. He wiped blood on me. He flicked blood all over the walls and was like screaming at me to be a man. And so I grabbed like my phone and my iPad and left the apartment and called the police.
Were you the only two?
I
love
you took your iPad. It's very important. Make sure to get your.
Yeah, of course.
get out there.
Were you the only two in there?
What I realized is I don't know the number for 911 in Burma.
Right.
And so I had
911 everywhere.
Just start screaming outside, like.
I know. I had to call the fixer at my office, and at like 4 in the morning, and be like, "Hey, well, my roommate's trying to kill me. Can you call the police?" So a guy in his pajamas rides a bicycle to my apartment. And I thought he had like, and there is an enraged, jacked Italian former Navy guy running around my apartment like freaking
out. So he's a big guy, this guy.
He was short, but like looked like a wrestler.
Okay.
And the cop pulls up and did not have a weapon. And then I look, and I'm like, oh, okay, he has like a gun on his belt of his little pajamas. No, it was his cell phone in the holster. So I had to call the fixer again, like, hey, you need to bring more people, because like one little like scrawny cop in his pajamas and flip-flops is not going to do anything.
Cops in the pajamas? What kind of military
did he have, like a nightcap on, like Willie?
Burma's the most half-assed fucking country.
You gotta like, say there's a Rohingya in you there or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, they would have attacked him then, but like I had to get my landlady, because I couldn't kick him out because I didn't have a copy of his passport. I had to pay the cops to kick him out. Yeah, it was a long story, but I never ran into him again, but he apparently is still around there. So,
and he hates you.
They didn't deport him. He's still,
I don't know. I have a feeling that he like would have come out of his stupor and feel like an idiot, because he attacked me and got, and then like had to.
He's actually now like an elected senator.
I was going to say, what does somebody like this do for a living in Myanmar? Like, what is he there for?
Oh, he ran a sweatshop where Burmese people made expensive Italian jackets.
Oh, like, boy.
He tried to get me to buy one time, and I was, because they were not, it was not an ugly jacket. It was like a weird, really European looking jacket. You know how like you see like everybody wearing like the Jack Wolfskin stuff?
It's yeah.
Like a European version. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't pull it up.
It's kind of a weird off brand, but not Jack Wolfskin, but like his was. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll get like a cheap jacket in Burma, made in Burma from the guy who runs the warehouse. He ordered like $400 for it. And I was like, go fuck yourself. No.
You're like, I know it costs 30 cents to make that.
Yeah, Ruby, yeah, literally. Literally.
You, it's literally from a sweatshop. There's
no nail. If you asked me for $40, I might have bought it.
That's... William Childress. Oh, my
Wait,
God.
Can this guy help us with our T-shirts? Maybe we can get a better deal in our number one our media shirts from this guy. Direct sweatshop. But yeah, 40 cents.
But long as I would go back to do a little stand-up, and if I had to go to jail, I wouldn't care to. The name of the prison is – it's named after the district of the town that it's in, and it's called Insane Prison.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Insein, that's like where all the political prisoners have been for decades. That's where Phil Blackwood went. Yeah.
Oh, if they're not under house arrest, that's where they send them.
Yeah, there's not a house nice enough to be put under arrest for me there, I think.
William Childress, everybody. Thank you for doing it, man.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to cut you off there. You're in the middle of a sentence.
No. You know, this is, what have you learned out of this whole experience? I mean, this
what have I learned? I've learned that I feel like I'm being told that like Santa's not real or something, you know, that revolutions don't work, that this idea that this Nelson Mandela lady figure all of a sudden is just, she never cared about minorities who were being murdered in the first place.
Yeah. She never said she did.
Yeah, exactly. I've learned that, you know, the Buddhists and women leaders, they always say that there's no violence if there's women in charge. Now I'm like, I got one example. I got a counterpoint.
Right. All I imagine.
This hand is Jacinda Ahern. On this hand is on Sense
Teacher. She's the Jacinda war criminal version.
Yeah. All I imagine is like her campaign song. Her campaign song is, "It ain't me, babe. No, it ain't me. It ain't me you're looking for." All right, that's the episode. William, where can people find you? How can they find you?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Hey It's Chili, HEYITSCHILI. And I'm going to be rebooting my old podcast, Fat Boy Magic, pretty soon. We're going to have new episodes of that, me and Anthony Driver, my brother from another mother here in Atlanta Comedy. And we're doing shows here, man. I've been doing indoor shows for weeks now.
That's like, wild, Atlanta, baby. So wild. You're not fat. You're much skinnier now. So how's the pod? You might have to change.
Well, Fat Boy Magic is it's a mentality.
Well, he's been in the. Right? Is that why you're in the gym so much? I see you on Instagram. You're always working out. Is it because of that guy who almost killed you in Myanmar? You're training for him.
Honestly, that is part of it. I don't ever. Yeah, you got to be ready again. I want bigger pecs than that guy.
Yeah, you got to do it, man. All right, that's it. Kaplan, William Childress, thanks for doing it. Kaplan, that's the show. What should we do?
I guess it's time I got to go watch my... I got to get lost. Let's get lost.
Get lost.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.